I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Here we go. It is a Wednesday on the Daily Tip on the BetMGM Network. I'm Michael Jenkins. She is Chelsea Messenger. Coming up on the show, we get started with the college football playoff rankings and the Buckeyes sitting at number one after those were released last night. In 20 minutes, it is the midway point of the season in the NFL. Yesterday, we talked about the NFC. Today, we will tackle the AFC. Then we have my streaming corner at 640. I'm Michael Jenkins. She is Chelsea Messenger. Hi, Chelsea. Good morning.
Good morning, Jenks. I think I'm back to officially hating Wednesday.
Oh, no.
Because for a while during baseball season and the postseason, I said to myself, oh, Wednesday, no problem. We have postseason baseball. But now it's back to having to bet on the NBA. And I'm not thrilled about that. But at least today, we still have a lot to talk about. We have the college football playoff rankings. We have, you know, everything that happened before the trade deadline in the NFL. So from a talking standpoint, we will still have great content on the show, but in the back of my mind, I'm like, ugh, can't wait to decide between, you know, betting on the Pelicans or the Spurs.
Ooh, that's a tough row. That's a tough one right there. We'll get there. We'll get, and plus it's tough too when, you know, we care about the NBA to a point, but also we have the college football playoff rankings released. I mean, that's big news. And then yesterday was a trade deadline in the NFL. My attention span goes about this wide. Right here. So you start expanding into, hey, how are the Thunder doing against the Clippers? I'm like, I'll figure it out, guys.
Well, especially when it's the first of the season. And you know, like, the first few weeks of the season don't really mean that much. Like, I understand the Thunder are still undefeated. Mm-hmm. But, like, the Thunder could lose, like, five games in a row and no one would be worried.
No, it's
like,
true.
We would probably talk about it. But at the end of the day, it does not matter. So that's any sport at the start of the season when you play a long schedule.
Yeah, I get it. I get it early on in the NBA. I guess we can talk about it a little bit. Magic Hawks, how you feeling? I liked your play yesterday.
I liked it too, Jenks. You would think with the Hawks missing their star point guard and Trae Young,
you would,
that the Hawks would lose this game, and it was not the case. So I was on the Magic laying the points on the road at Atlanta, but the Hawks win it 127-112. This is the mystery of betting on the NBA. Oh, the star player is out? Lay the points with the other team. Not so fast, my friend. So the journey continues.
Well, I was on the Raptors -4.5 hosting the Bucks, and my thought was that Giannis won't play because it was the back end of a back-to-back. He had that game winner against the Pacers a couple nights ago. He did play. Still didn't matter. Bucks were tired, I guess, whatever. Had the Raptors -4.5. It came home. So had I known, when you talk about the mysteries of the NBA, had I known Giannis was definitely going to play, he was questionable going into this game, I would have been like, I don't know if I like this bet now. And yet it still won. So I'm like, yeah, that's right. I knew this was going to happen. I knew.
Right?
Yeah, I knew.
Betting on the NBA feels like you're like trying to guess the decisions of like a teenage boy. You're like, what are they going to do next?
Yeah.
Like, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? We'll try it again today.
We will. Dogster just keeps following the Thunder trend. Thunder are 8-0 and also 8-0 against the number. Like, they're just unbelievable and not even fully healthy. So they take care of business against the Clippers 126-107. Like I was saying yesterday, the Clippers are old. They're old. And if you think they're old now, just wait until the end of the season. So for the week, Chelsea, you're 1-1. I'm 1-0. Denton is 3-1. 3-1. Still knocking it out of the park. Donkster, 1-0 here on the Daily Tip on the BetMGM Network. It is great to have you with us on the midweek edition. College football playoff rankings released last night. So Ohio State 1, Indiana 2, followed by Texas A&M and Bama. Those are your top four. Georgia, Ole Miss, BYU, Texas Tech, Oregon, Notre Dame are the top 10. And then Texas and Oklahoma round out the top 12. So any surprises here or anything that stood out to you when these were released?
I feel like the biggest story here is your team, Jenks, Texas. And now it feels like the pathway feels like it's all in the driver's seat for the Longhorns. Because think about it. I think a lot of people thought, hey, we can't have a three-loss team come into, you know, the college football playoff and even like the top 10. But I feel like there's a pathway for Texas to do so because they're standing there at number 11 and they have a really tough schedule to end the year.
Yeah.
So they go on the road to Georgia. Then they finish the season at home against Texas A&M. And those are, you know, two teams that are both in the top five. So I think from the college football playoff rankings, we can tell like the strategy that the college football playoff committee is using, where they are not punishing those teams mm-hmm. for those tough non-conference games that they have scheduled in an effort to keep having teams schedule those games. So you look at Texas's loss against Ohio State, who is the number one team, mm-hmm. and it was the first week of the season with a new quarterback or a newish quarterback in Arch Manning, and it feels like the committee is not punishing them for that. Now you look at their loss against Florida, and you're like, well, what about that one?
That wasn't good.
But it just feels like they are basing Texas' ranking off like saying, hey, this is basically a one-loss team. So, James, you have to be feeling great.
Yeah, I feel great right now. Feels awesome. I mean, it doesn't feel awesome at 6:06 in the morning. You feel better if it were 9:06 in the morning. But yes, I was surprised. I thought Texas would be on the outside looking in, but it's clear the committee values those high-end losses. You know, you don't want to lose a game, but certainly if you lose to Ohio State, then that's not going to be nearly as punitive than if you lose to Kennesaw State. So, of course, that made me happy. But I will also say that I think that, you know, there are some interesting things here. So Texas has a path now, right, because of that schedule. They also take on Arkansas, which is a longtime SWC rival from the Southwest Conference. So not necessarily an easy game there. But they have the bye this week. They need to get healthy, so that's good for the Horns. I was a little surprised. Oklahoma at 12 right there. But we were talking about this yesterday. Miami, Notre Dame, what's going to happen? Because Miami has the head-to-head over Notre Dame, and yet Notre Dame has had the better season since that loss. And here we are, Notre Dame sitting at 10 right now, whereas Miami is number 17 with two losses. So they're not even close. Eventually they could maybe get there, but clearly the committee values Notre Dame instead.
Yeah, the committee does not value the ACC. Mm-hmm. And I understand you look at the list, you're like, well, look at, you know, Virginia. Those teams aren't getting in. Like, I know that they're there now and it's based on their, you know, wins and losses. It just feels to me that there is too much chaos going on in the ACC and it's just not a schedule that can, or excuse me, a conference that people believe in. Honestly, I feel like they give more credit to the Big 12. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at all the teams from the Big 12 who are sitting in the top 12, or excuse me, top 15. So I think for me, it's more, I don't think anybody believes in the ACC.
Yeah.
Like maybe there's a pathway, but it feels like it's going to be a very steep uphill climb and some other teams are going to have to lose.
Yeah, it kind of feels that way as well. And I also think that, you know, there are going to be some people who make a case for more teams from the SEC, which I don't know. I try not to get caught up in SEC over everything. Like, I am definitely not an SEC guy just because Texas is suddenly in the SEC. I said this even when Texas was in the Big 12. Like, I'm conference agnostic. I don't care. I just want my team to win and everyone else to lose. Then what'd you think? You're a big college football guy. You know the system here.
I was intrigued by some of this stuff. You know, I love that they have BYU and Texas Tech exactly one spot away from each other, and they play this weekend. So that's going to be a whole lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And that is now the most important game of the weekend. You know, I do find it. So Alabama beats Georgia, and they're one spot. Georgia beats Ole Miss, and they're one spot. But then you have that massive discrepancy between Notre Dame and Miami. And generally speaking, I subscribe to the principle that the games have to matter. If you play each other and then one team wins and one team loses, there needs to be a very noticeable, hey, the team that beat the team that lost is ranked higher. But because of the very unique aspect of what is happening with Miami, which is where Carson Beck is taking off the mask, and you're like, oh, yeah, this is exactly who he is. They are clearly recognizing that as well.
Yeah.
And Notre Dame is clearly on the ascension. Miami is in what I would describe as a free fall with, you know, Stanford mixed in there. Sorry, Stanford.
Classic Miami.
I mean, they're on a free fall right now. And the scary thing is they haven't even had the game where Mario Cristobal is going to screw it all up. They just had two bad games from the quarterback. So I thought that I just found that to be very interesting. And then, you know, I texted you this weekend that Texas is back in there.
Yeah.
They have the avenue to be the first three loss team to get in because their resume is as strong as it is.
That's true. I like hearing that. Love hearing that. I will also say that I thought that Oregon was maybe a touch low. Maybe I'm wrong. They only lost to Indiana, but aren't they being punished a little bit by what would have been maybe a couple months ago a great win over Penn State and now looks like, oh, well, that wasn't as good as we thought. But that loss by Penn State is maybe the trigger for why the Nittany Lions started spiraling. So I thought Oregon was a touch low here.
Well, it's you look at their schedule and, like, what's their signature win? Like, I don't think they have a single win over a ranked opponent.
Yeah.
I'm looking, and I'm not finding one because they lost to Indiana, and that was the only ranked team who's currently still ranked on their schedule. But if you do look at the last three games remaining for them, okay, so they have Minnesota this week at home. Maybe not a speed bump there, but then they have number 20 USC, and then they finish the season at Washington, who is, you know, a really tough place to play. And Oregon and Washington, like, if it's not a rivalry, but I do think those two teams are very familiar with each other, obviously both coming from the West Coast. So there could be some potential pitfalls for Oregon. I don't think that they will lose those games, but it will be interesting down the stretch. And that's the thing about these rankings, that some of these things will play themselves out.
Yeah.
So I know people love to look at the potential matchups, but it just does not matter right now because we see this every season. There is chaos down the stretch that ensues in college football. So I will not be betting on these matchups just yet or, you know, laying out my bets because it feels like the matchups can still change.
Yeah, I think the Oregon case is really curious because, yeah, you look back now and you say, okay, well, they don't really have a signature win. But that win at Penn State was a signature win. Like going into Happy Valley in that environment, in a whiteout where Penn State was favored by many to win a national title, and they get that dub in overtime, it's a massive win. It's a huge win. The problem is that that win actually sent Penn State into a spiral because all of a sudden it feeds into the old trope, Penn State can't win the big one under James Franklin, so they go to UCLA, they lose to Northwestern, Franklin gets fired, but it was because Oregon beat them in the way that they did. So Oregon in some ways is getting punished for its own success because in most years we look at that win and say that is a signature win on the road in an impossible environment, but because they sent the Ducks where they did or the Nittany Lions where they did, all of a sudden we look back and say Oregon really hasn't beaten anybody. I don't necessarily think that's fair.
Right. I think that you certainly have a case to argue there, especially when your only loss on the season is to the number two team
right
in the land. So you're looking down at Texas and you're like, hey, like they lost to an unranked team. They're not that far behind us. Like what's going on here?
Yeah. Also, you ask yourself a simple question. If Penn State wins that game, and it was really close, do you think Penn State falls apart the way it does? No, not at all. They would probably be undefeated right now. So I think that's one thing that, you know, when you're looking at numbers and when you're just looking at, okay, who have they beat? You say, oh, they haven't beaten anybody. But that's not really the case. It's because of that win that Penn State fell apart. So kind of intriguing there. Oregon right now sitting at the 9 spot. If the playoffs started today, they would take number on. Or who would they face? They would face number 8, Texas Tech, which would be an interesting matchup there. Also, I also thought that when you look at going back to Notre Dame and Miami for a second, I wanted to get some insight on exactly how they look at that. And Mac Rhodes, who is the, you know, the CFP chair, basically said, yeah, I understand the head-to-head part of that, and that is certainly part of the equation. But as D-Day alluded to, all things being equal, I think you have to lean towards head-to-head. But if you're looking at the totality of the season and how teams have fared since that battle, then you have a longer runway and you have more things to look at. And clearly, that's what Rhodes and the rest of the committee did.
Right. And at the end of the day, like their goal is to make good college football playoff games as well. And so,
right.
Like, if you have a team that's in an absolute free fall, like, you don't want to include that team because, you know, we've seen the writing on the wall. This is not a good team at the end of the season. So I understand where they're going there. It'll be interesting. Jenks, your Longhorns, 30-1 to win the national championship. Looks like they have a good pathway to get in the college football playoff. They were the preseason number ones. Worth a sprinkle?
Maybe. I don't know. I need to see Sark put together an offensive game plan for more than 1 week. More than 1 week, Sark. Keep Arch upright. The kids, he's okay. He's all right. Okay? Maybe a sprinkle. 30 to 1, not too shabby. Come up next. Oh, yeah. We got midway point of the season in the NFL. So are we actually betting on the Bills again for the fourth straight year? Look at the AFC is next on the Daily Tip here on the BetMGM Network.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. It is the Daily Tip on the BetMGM Network. Hope you're having a great morning. I'm Michael Jenkins. She is Chelsea Messenger. Coming up on the show, once again, the Chiefs and Bills are leading the way in the AFC. But can the Colts or Ravens break up the party? How's that chili? Good? Sending any this way? Talking to you. You're my don't look around. I'm talking to you. How's that crock pot chili? How is it?
I haven't made any yet. Like, I made it for, what was it, last week? I don't like to make the same thing within, like, the next few days.
Oh, okay.
So we did not have chili last night.
We made spaghetti. For us?
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. It was great. The lovely Catherine was like, I'm sorry, I'm not a good wife, and I haven't made more home-cooked meals. I was like, honey, come on. What are you talking about? Because we just eat out so much. I was like, I don't expect anything. It's just that I get so excited. I'm like, oh my God, this is so good. This is so good. This is so delicious. So that was good for us. We're trying to do a better job of cooking at home together, you know, being in the kitchen. And I just do a lot of stirring. That's essentially my job. So I'll stir this to make sure it doesn't burn or anything. But it was great. So for us, for people who have such a bad habit of door dashing all the time, we're trying to do a better job of eating at home. That was a good first baby step for us.
Well, I think it's tough, especially when you live in like a big city where there's so many good restaurants. Like, think about it. Like, you're competing. Your home cooking is competing against like 5-star chefs or whatever they do for chefs. Is it Michelin stars? I don't know, because I'm not super into that world. But you get what I'm saying is that it's difficult to scale that back once you've been eating out, because that food is so good and you don't have to do dishes.
That's the best part, because we cooked last night, and I always... You know, just to be fair, I'm like, listen, if you're going to do the majority of the cooking, then I'm going to clean up, just to be fair here. So I'll get in there and I'll scrub the pots and pans and all that stuff. But that's the one thing when you're done, like, oh, that was so good. I got like 4 pans I got to scrub and clean. With DoorDash, you just close it up and throw it away. That's the key. The food is great, but the cleanup is, that's the real linchpin of the entire thing.
Yeah, I think that's why you try to clean while you cook. I know it's not super fun, but like, this is the difference between me cooking and my husband cooking. Is it like when Jake cooks, the entire kitchen is a mess. And so we have that sinking feeling after we finish our meal. We're like, oh, we got to do the dishes now. But when I cook, I try to, you know, tidy up while things are cooking. And I feel like that takes away some of it. But when you eat every meal at home, it's a lot of dishes and it sucks. Like, there is nothing worse than like menial housework. I don't care who you are. Like, nobody enjoys that. Like, there's nobody that's like, oh, I can't wait to scrub these dishes and this half-eaten food from somebody else. There's nothing grosser than cleaning off half-eaten food of somebody else. I will clean my own half-eaten food, but when it's from somebody else, that is a huge ick.
Very fair. Very fair. I get that as well. But I try to clean when I cook as well. Like, just along the way, all right, I'm done with this. Let me put it away. I'm done with this. I'm done with this pan. I'll sort of clean it so that way we don't have this mess when we're done. Is the AFC a mess, Chelsea? No, it's not. Nice and clean near the top, just the way you want it. Chiefs and Bills are the favorites to win the AFC. What's new? Chiefs, +275. The Bills at 3-1. Then you have the Colts, +550. The Ravens, 9-1. Broncos, 9-1. Chargers and Patriots, 11-1. Here we are again. Mid-season in the National Football League. Oh, are the Chiefs going to be okay? What about the Bills? A couple weeks ago, they got their butts beat. Are they going to be okay? Ooh, look at the Broncos. Look at the AFC West. The Ravens are terrible. And yet, all the dust settles. And here we are. Bills, Chiefs, Buffalo wins in the regular season, and they're probably going to meet in the playoffs, and then the Chiefs are probably going to win again. Is this the way it's going to go?
I mean, it might. And I think just from a conversation standpoint, like, nobody's going to be shocked, and you can make an excellent case for either of these teams to win the AFC, but we're a betting show. So, James, we are looking for value. So I think when you take that into consideration, you say, okay, the Chiefs plus 275, the Bills 3-1. Like, who could possibly crash the party when it comes to the AFC? And granted, we're not asking them to win a Super Bowl. They simply need to win the AFC or even get there if the line is, long enough. So I think there are a couple of good candidates here. What do you think the ceiling is on the Patriots, the Colts, who are only 5-1, I should include that, or even it's surprising to me that the odds makers still have faith in the Ravens. The Ravens are still only 9-1 to win the AFC despite having a losing record. So, Jenks, of those three teams, which do you think is most likely to crash the party?
Ooh, could it be the Ravens? Are they really going to do this? Like, here's the thing with the Patriots. Like, the Patriots are very good. They're well-coached, and Drake May's having a fine season. The Patriots are the Commanders from a year ago, is what they are, right? Yeah. Where they struggled, they weren't good in the season previously, now they have a young quarterback, they have a new head coach, and all of a sudden, what are we seeing? We're seeing a team put it all together, they're making magic, coming out of nowhere. Right now, they're challenging for the division lead. Like, there's a lot of similarities there. But the one thing that was holding back the Commanders last year is that they weren't doing it with smoke and mirrors, but there were some definite gaps in that team. And I feel like one of those gaps was championship experience. And that's why right now, when you look at the AFC East, you're seeing the Bills at minus 175. You see the Patriots plus 135, even though the Patriots lead the division. I still think it's the Bills' division to win. And we saw last week, like, the demise of the Bills has been greatly overstated. I know they have owned Kansas City outside of the playoffs, but as soon as you count the Bills out, what happens? They step up defensively. Josh Allen plays out of his mind. He was hyper-efficient last week, and then they keep winning. So I don't think this is the Patriots' year to maybe disrupt the top echelon of teams in the AFC. But I do think the Ravens, now that Lamar's back and that defense is playing much better, particularly over the past 3 weeks, the Ravens are the team who, once again, might just be there in the end to kind of disrupt what we've seen.
I think the biggest takeaway from the Bills game against the Chiefs was not the offense, because we know Josh Allen is really good. And even in those losses to Kansas City in the postseason, rarely has it been Josh Allen's fault. But the way that the defense looked and the way that they were limiting that Kansas City offense is a big deal for a Bills defense. This looked like it's had some holes. Like, I remember, you know, seeing it, I was like, oh, Joey Bosa is actually healthy and playing and making a difference for this Bills defense. And that is a huge deal because we know how talented he can be. But I think if this Bills defense can keep it together, that is the difference maker for Buffalo as opposed to, you know, their offense, because the offense is always going to be good. But we haven't talked about the Colts either. Do you think they need to be thrown in there? I wish we had longer odds, because it feels to me that I still have some questions about them in the postseason. Because think about it. You're standing in a room with Josh Allen, with Patrick Mahomes, with Lamar Jackson, and Daniel Jones.
Okay.
Do you want to trust Daniel Jones? And I understand he's had a fine season. But when it comes to the postseason, it feels like you have to step up your game. So statistically speaking, the Colts are this great team that, you know, all the statistics love. But I do think that you have to earn your stripes in the postseason. So at 5-1, I think that's too short of a price on Indianapolis.
Yeah, I think so as well. Although, I want to give Danny Dimes some credit. Indiana Jones, are you falling into the trap where, and I don't say it's a trap because maybe there's something to this, where he has a bad game like he did against the Steelers and you're like, oh, here we go. Same old Danny Dimes again. I tend to try to look at the totality of his work, and he's been great. And every quarterback in the NFL, even the greats, have bad games. So I'm not saying Danny Dimes is one of the greats. I'm saying that it's not out of the realm of possibility that he can have a great season and still have an off game, particularly against the Steelers defense and the way they were playing last week. How do you feel about Indiana Jones?
Well, also, like, it's not all on him because their run game is so good.
Yeah.
So, like, he doesn't necessarily have to be Superman or Indiana Jones for this team to be really successful from what we saw from the defense. And, of course, we just had the trade deadline and the Colts beefing up their defense with Sauce Gardner. So I think it's one of those things where, you know, he doesn't have to put up the numbers that we'll have to see from Josh Allen in order for the Bills to win a football game. But it should be interesting down the stretch. Do you think we should mention the Broncos?
Sure.
I feel like I'm being a little disrespectful by not saying, hey, the Broncos have the fourth shortest odds in the AFC, but I think I have the same reservations about their offense.
Okay.
And so we've seen this Broncos offense be kind of inconsistent this year, and that's kind of what you expect from a young quarterback like Bo Nix. And the defense has had some injuries, like Pat Surtain having to miss some games as well. But the defense overall is still very, very good. I just look at those top-tier teams, like the Broncos. If they were in a matchup against, you know, the Bills, I'm not sure if their offense can keep up.
Yeah, I think that's probably the case. But I will say, when you have a stout defense like they have, you can kind of hang with anyone. I worry a little bit about the Bills defense because I feel like the Bills defense will rise up at certain times like we saw against the Chiefs and then just have an absolute flop of a game where they give up 30, 40 points a game. Maybe I'm feeding into a stereotype here. But when you have a great head coach like Sean Payton, when you have a very good quarterback, not an exceptional quarterback, but a solid quarterback and Bo Nix in that defense, you can kind of play with anyone. I think the question is, come the postseason when they aren't playing in Denver, like getting the Broncos in Denver is, that's a difficult place to play because of the home field, because of the elevation. But with the way things are sort of trending now, the Broncos are going to be on the road, and I feel like that's when they're really vulnerable.
Yeah. Okay, so we've explored some of these options, and we've talked about quote-unquote value, but how about the conservative side of things? If you're the ultimate front runner, you say, hey, the Bills and the Chiefs are in a league of their own. You could honestly bet on both of these teams, and if one of them win the AFC Championship, you would still be up money. Is this a smart bet?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of making multiple bets, you know, in a particular conference, even if you can end up with some plus money. You got to be a big believer. I will say, if you have a very strong belief, you can make a very strong case, and maybe you can, then it's worth your money. But for me, I would sort of say, oh, these two teams could probably win it, and that's not a strong enough case in my head for me to make that bet. What about you?
I think one of them probably will win the AFC.
Yeah.
But maybe there are other good conservative ways to play this. Because, again, going back to my normal strategy of, hey, we just need to make it to the AFC championship game. And then you have one side of the coin at a pretty long number. So I think when you look at the Bills and the Chiefs, you're like, okay, which team should I trust of those teams? Who has the better chance to win their division? I don't think that the Bills necessarily have a cakewalk over the Patriots. But the same could be said for the Chiefs just simply because their record is just not that great at this juncture in the season. Like, I would have to look at the standings. But at the end of the day, I do think both those teams probably do end up winning their divisions. I think this is where the Colts have a leg up on the competition because they have a big lead in the AFC South, and it feels like they're going to win their division. So their pathway is going to be easier just because they're probably going to be penciled in already as a division winner.
Yeah, I think that's probably the case. I'm trying to find if there's any value on this list at all. Let me throw this out to you because I think it's sort of interesting. Like, we were talking about the Patriots. Can the Patriots be a disruptor? Can the Patriots be a disruptor? They have the same odds as the Chargers to win the AFC at 11-1. We have quite literally talked about every team on this list except for the Chargers. Why is that? Because that's why.
Because Joe Alt has had season-ending surgery, and that was a huge blow to the Chargers, who already had some injuries on their offensive line to start the season with Rashawn Slater. I know that they did add some offensive line talent during the trade deadline, but, like, Joe Alt was the dude up front.
Yeah.
Like, you look at the numbers for Justin Herbert with Joe Alt in the games, and it's night and day. So he is a big loss on the offensive line, and it's just a trickle-down thing. When you have protection for your quarterback, the passing game is better, and then complimentary football says, you know, the run game is even better. So that one kind of scares me a little bit.
Yeah, I hear that. And it's amazing, too. That's how you know you're an incredible lineman in the NFL.
Yeah.
Because, you know what I mean? It's not often in the National Football League where a lineman goes out. And I know they lost Rashawn Slater at the start of the year. But it's not often that a guy goes out on the O-line and he has such a significant impact that the rest of the offense falters behind that injury. But Joe Alt is that guy. Like, I remember when they drafted him out of Notre Dame, I think it was. And that guy was an absolute just stud with the Irish. And you knew this is a plug-and-play guy. You put him in, he's going to dominate for a long time. So I hope he gets healthy. But I think your point is well taken, which is once you take a guy like that out, particularly when you're running that Harbaugh offense, which relies so much on balance, like if you want to be successful and you're LA, you've got to be able to do both things. If you lean too far into one or the other, you're just not quite the team that Harbaugh wants to be. So you're right. It is a significant loss. Coming up next here on the show, yeah, we love our sports, but we also love our streaming corner. It's a Wednesday. I almost said when I was preparing the show yesterday, I had nothing that I'd watch. Well, I was wrong. I came up with something. I bet Chelsea has something. We'll check in with everyone else. That's coming up next on the Daily Tip, and it is here on the BetMGM Network.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Make it legendary. Download the app today. Please gamble responsibly.
Welcome back to the show. Michael Jenkins, she is Chelsea Messenger. Coming up on the show, it is Wednesday, which means it is time for our streaming corner, and maybe that includes an episode-by-episode recap of Gabby's Dollhouse. Maybe? Yeah?
Well, I don't watch it. Blake watches it, but I'm not sitting there, like, glued to the screen, like, what's Cat Rat gonna do next, that bastard? Like, no.
That bastard? Come on, guy. What are you doing here? Oh, all right. I have to say, since we're talking streaming here, if they don't get it together, and by that I mean YouTube TV and ESPN, like, I'm gonna lose my mind. Oh, my God. Anyway. What is your thought? And I'm especially upset about this because I got an email from ESPN yesterday that the price for their app is going up. I don't have their unlimited app where it's just all ESPN all the time. You watch all their shows. But I have the ability to, you know, stream different games and get extra content. And that's going up $20 a year.
Like, everything's going up, right?
I know.
At what point do we just try to, like, get some bunny ears and put some antenna on top of our TVs and say maybe we can catch a signal for some of these channels, because it's just getting to be too much. And like, there is a reason that we had cable in the first place, because all of the channels were in one spot. And Jinx, as I am getting stuff for my mom who is older, it's like even more confusing, because she used to be able to just, hey, channel up, channel down. Now it's like, you have to go to home, you have to put YouTube TV. So, like, I wish that we had an easier option. I don't know if there is, but, like, somebody needs to give us, like, a handout or a flyer on, like, our options these days. Because none of this is our fault. Like, this was not our doing. Like, we were loyal viewers to all of these stations or whatever, and we just had the rug pulled out from under us. Like, as Christmas approaches, like, this is the equivalent of, like, you know, if we were kids, somebody doing something to Santa Claus. Like, it just feels like Christmas is canceled. It's like, oh, you want to watch college hoops? Good luck finding it, because you don't get ESPN anymore. So I don't know. These companies are basically the Grinch, and they need to give Christmas back.
Yes, they do. So before we get to the streaming corner, we did want to talk about this story as well, because one thing you can always stream is UFC. If you're a big fight fan, I know Dylan's a big fight fan. He's giving it all sorts of plays in the show before he went on paternity leave. So Dana White says he has heard from his fighters within UFC, and he's angry about this, and that those fighters have been approached about potentially throwing fights.
You know, you're seeing things out on the internet where, like, fighters are coming out and going, oh, I was approached. Really? Why didn't you tell us that? Or more importantly, why didn't you tell law enforcement that you were approached? Now you're saying that you were approached? It's like if somebody comes up and says, hey, I want you to rob a bank. I'm going to rob banks. Want to rob a bank with me? And you don't, you're not going to tell law enforcement? They're going to be approached now by the FBI.
Maybe that's because they were thinking about it. I guess I could go down after a glancing shot to the left temple and maybe I cash. That's probably why they didn't say anything about it. I don't know. That's just speculation. Or maybe they were just like, I don't want to know. I don't want to get involved. But it is an interesting question. If you've been approached, why haven't you said anything? It just goes to show that what we've seen in the NBA, for example, most recently, is not specific to the NBA.
Well, it does feel like fighting's like the OG when it comes to quote-unquote like sports that could be thrown. Like, yes. You see this in like old-timey movies from like the 1910s where it's like a boxer is just going to take a punch and everybody had their money on him to lose. So I understand where they're coming from, but like think about a situation where, hey, the mob approaches you about, you know, throwing a fight. And you're like, why didn't you tell anybody? Because it's the mob. And, like, imagine they find out that you told the police on them. And, like, what if the police didn't do anything? I don't want to put myself and my family in that position.
Right.
I say, not this time, but maybe next time. Okay, guys? Are we all good? Like, that's what I would do.
Yeah, let me tell you something about me. I ain't no snitch. You know what I mean? You come to me, and you want to throw a fight? Nobody's going to ask me to throw a fight. Be like, nah, that's easy. One punch, I'm out. I'm almost 52. I don't even have to work at that. Just put me in the ring. I'll lose. Yeah, if somebody comes to me, and that person scares me, I'm not immediately saying, let me go to the police. I'd be like, you know what? I don't want to know. I don't want anything to do with this. You guys, like, do your own thing. You don't have to worry about me, but I am staying out of it. I think that's a good point. That's probably the best explanation.
Yeah, you say, nothing to see here. Everything's right. Great. I'm just going to go about my day. So that's probably why, Dana White, this is why people are not reporting it. Because the mob, I don't know if you've heard about their reputation.
Yeah.
But they're kind of scary guys.
These guys, I tell you what, they're a little below board. You know what? Not the best. I'll just put it that way. Not the best. Well, it is the Streaming Corner time, so it's time to brown the meat.
What are you watching?
We enter Jenks Streaming Corner, where Jenks and Chelsea tell you what should and should not be streaming here on the Daily Tip.
What are you watching?
Did I talk about this? This documentary? Maybe I did. If I'm repeating myself, it's okay. The Biggest Loser documentary. I feel like I maybe talked about this. Fit
you
for TV.
About it.
Okay.
I'm
reality,
interested, though.
Yeah. Finished it yesterday. Very interesting because I used to watch The Biggest Loser all of the time. And now I have a totally different idea about what that show is about. And so, of course, it was great TV. And this is streaming on Netflix, 3 parts. Really well done. They talked to a lot of people who were involved in that show. And including a lot of contestants. First of all, almost all of them have gained the weight back. Almost every single person. Sometimes, if not more. And one of the reasons for that, one of the theories is because they didn't lose weight in a healthy manner. Like, you'd see them on the treadmill, and Bob or Jillian would be yelling at them, like, come on! Come on! And like, I can't do it. They're falling over. They're vomiting. It's like, they should not have been pushed like that. Like, medical experts are like, this is dangerous. One contestant nearly died. Like, she went to the hospital, and she got up out of the initial challenge, was like, no, I'm going to continue on this show, and continued. But she almost died. Like, she was sort of non-responsive there. So they didn't really care about actual health. It was just like, I got to, you know, I'm going to do whatever I can to make these guys lose weight, even if it's not necessarily healthy for them, even if they're starving along the way. And that was fascinating, too, is that some of these contestants knew, okay, I'm a week out. I have a chance to win hundreds of thousands of dollars here. So not only am I doing these workouts that are just absolutely insane that no sane person should be doing, no person under medical supervision should be doing, I'm just not going to eat for a week because I'm trying to win this money. So then that would become a factor. And so looking back now, you could see things that these contestants would laugh about and say, they would put us in these situations where, okay, you've worked out, now go into this room filled with cake and donuts. And it'd make for great TV, but they'd be like, that's not reality. I don't come home after a workout. It's like, uh-oh, here's a whole room filled with fresh donuts. Like, that's, temptation is there, but this is clearly built for TV. And so they would have the producers who were like, hey, we were there to produce a TV show. Did you watch? This was a worldwide phenomenon. It was. It worked. And then the contestants were like, yeah, it was supremely unhealthy. So very fascinating to watch 3 episodes. If you watch The Biggest Loser, very fascinating to see them pull the curtain back and watch behind the scenes.
Right, because they were dehumanized. And it was like, nobody cares about you as a person. We just want to see you lose weight.
It's true.
And especially it's rich coming from, you know, health professionals and fitness professionals who are supposed to be experts in this line of work where things are supposed to be healthy. And so you see things that are done in an unsustainable way because losing weight, it's not sustainable if you do it in that way. Like, I don't know if you've ever been around like wrestlers or people who have to like make weight. I remember this in college. They would take home like Ziploc bags full of like spaghetti, and like 1 week they would just be, you know, gorging themselves on food. And then the next week they'd be on the treadmill for hours in sweatsuits. That is not a sustainable life. Like, you can do that for college and maybe a little after if you're still wrestling, but it's not a healthy way. Like, who here is like, yeah, yo-yo dieting is the best way, you know, to stay healthy and fit? No, it's not. And it just puts your body, you know, in a constant state of stress. Yeah. So all these health professionals, they knew that and they did it anyway because of the ratings and because of the glory and because of the money that these TV contracts were probably paying them.
It's true. And so it's amazing to look back now and have a totally different perspective on something that I was a fan of at the time. I'm not going to lie. And looking back now, I'm like, oh, I saw this from a completely different viewpoint than I do now because I was just caught up in the reality of it all. So we have a couple minutes here. I'm sorry to cut you off. What have you been watching?
Well, nothing great. And I don't think you guys want to hear about like what I'm watching because I am watching Selling Sunset, which, go ahead and roll your eyes, is, you know, the worst of reality television other than the dating shows. Like, I don't watch those. That is absolute trash. But I like real estate, and I do think it's fascinating when they show these big houses and they're like, this is what makes a house expensive. But Selling Sunset has kind of gotten away with that and or gone away with that, and now it's more about the drama between the women. So sometimes you just roll your eyes, but occasionally you need a break from like intelligent TV. So that is my break, and that is my one time where I'm like, hey, this is the equivalent of junk food. I can watch a little, but I can't constantly watch this or else I will turn into a bad person.
I think the lovely Catherine started watching that as well. I think I asked her, what have you been watching? She's like, oh, there's a new season out. Selling Sunset. That's what she's been watching. So she's into that. I mean, if you do like real estate, I will say that aspect of it is super fascinating to me. I don't really get caught up in the reality of it, but I can see how that would be a perfect mix.
Well, it used to be more about the real estate, and now it's more about the girls. And you're like, when are they selling real estate when they're getting into all these catfights?
They don't have time. Yeah, I've seen that, man. It's like, look at this home. Why are you being so cold to me? Like, oh, God, here we go. Coming up next on the show. Just one more day until Week 10 gets underway in the NFL. But before that happens, we'll hand out our first impression roses, speaking of reality shows. That's next on The Daily Tip on...
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.